This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
My name is Matt Mangano, and I play bass with the Zach Brown Band. Welcome to the stage.
Here we are at the Paso Robles Mid-State Fair.
California Mid-State Fair, yeah. So I grew up in Visalia, and so we used to vacation. We'd come over for a golf tournament every summer that my dad played in. So he and some other friends would play in this golf tournament in San Luis Obispo. So it was always like this one weekend in August, and we'd come over through Paso Robles, see the signs for the Mid-State Fair every year. Who's playing here? Garth Brooks, you know, whoever, back in the 90s, and then go hang out down at the beach. And the first time I came to the county fair was playing. So I used to perform in a band.
Never talked to your dad and detouring?
No, we never stopped here for the fair. We were always focused on getting down there and to where it was cooler, you know, getting to the beach. And but I was in a band when I was 16, 17 years old with these guys who were all like about 15 years older than I was. So they got us gigs. We would play all around the Central Valley, like opening up for the big country acts who would come through. So.
And what group was this?
We were called Ruckus. And so we got to open up for, you know, Joe Diffie, Pam Tillis, Patti Loveless, you name it. But we came here and we played one of the smaller stages at the Mid-State Fair. And that was my first and only time that I had been here until I came back with Zach Brown Band.
So let's back up, rewind in your life. At what point when you were a kid did music get you, and how did it get you?
Man, it got me, I think it was probably right around in between the fourth and the fifth grade.
Was there a moment in time? Was there something?
Yeah, so it was a combination of a few things. So my dad had been playing some guitar. He's not I wouldn't say he's a guitar player, but he always had a guitar and he played it. So I guess he's a guitar player.
Acoustic.
A Martin, a 1967 Martin.
All right, which you still have that one, huh?
Yeah, I do. It's hanging on my wall.
Really?
Yeah. He let me have it. His dad had given it to him. So anyhow, he was playing in some church youth groups my dad was leading. And around the same time, we had taken a trip to Southern California to visit some family. And my uncles had been in bands growing up. And so they had gotten their guitars out and reunited after a long time of not playing together, and they sat around for hours and hours playing Beatles songs, you know, 60s, 70s, so they knew the harmonies, they knew all the parts, and I had never seen anything like that in person in my life, and I remember having my dad's camcorder and recording it and going back home and watching it over and over again, and so that led into the fifth grade school year when we could choose an instrument, so I chose the alto saxophone. And at the same time, I chose guitar, so I took some lessons at a local music store, Music Source in Visalia, California. Took some lessons there, and I kind of learned guitar and saxophone at the same time.
So as it evolved, I mean, you're bass right now. Right?
Yeah, so, you know, I say that most bass players are born out of necessity. No one ever really chooses the bass, it sort of just chooses you.
Is that because it's not the glory position?
It's not the glory position, you know. Bass player is usually on the bandstand, is usually more toward the back of the stage, and, you know.
But, you know, if you think about it, take the bass away, and you're missing something huge.
That's right. You don't know what you got until it's gone. I wanted to be in a high school jazz band, and that was the only instrument that was available. And so the director said, hey, if you can learn this bass, you know, if you have the summer to learn the bass, if you can do that, you can come be in the high school jazz band. So I did that in rock jazz and standards, big band, all of that. So that's kind of how it started with bass, and I just kind of never left.
This is a little subjective, but in your world, the world of the bass, philosophically, what does it do? And why is it so essential to the whole band?
Well, on a very technical level, the bass provides the fundamental note. It defines what the chord is. If the piano player is playing a C, an E, and a G chord, that's a C major triad. So if the bass player plays a C, then it is a C major chord. If the bass player plays an A over that same triad, then it's an A minor chord. If I play an F over that same triad, is an F major 7 chord. So the bass is what defines what the chord will be.
So you determine.
I can literally change the feeling of the song at any moment, for good or bad, mm-hmm. right or wrong, I can do it.
That's a real powerful position.
It is. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And then on a rhythmic level, the bass is sort of like, I've heard it described by other people as it's like a drum with notes. So, because...
I think very much drum when I think of bass.
Absolutely,
from that
yeah.
rhythmic standpoint.
Yeah, because it's sort of... Everyone thinks it always falls on the drummer to keep time. And I think that it shouldn't fall just on the drummer. I think the bass player is equally responsible for the time. And when they're working together, you get a really nice pocket for the time for the rest of the band to sort of float on top of.
There's a phrase... playing in concert, not in a concert,
right.
but you guys playing together. That being said, there is this room for ad-libbing and playing on the moment.
There is, and that's one of my favorite things about being in this band. And when I joined the band, Zach said, you don't have to play the parts that are on the record. You can do whatever you want. So he sort of had a lot of trust and faith that I would make the right choices and not take advantage of that. So it's really great. I mean, that's kind of the dream as a musician, is for someone to tell you, do whatever you want here. And so I took that as, you know what, at the most basic level, what it should be. So choose wisely. And so I've tried to, you know, with certain songs, I feel like you have to be true to the record. The Chicken Fried, you got to play the part. With other songs, you know, there's a lot more freedom, you know, on the more sort of a maybe funk-based or islandy reggae-based songs, you can kind of play around with that.
When you're in your normal life, off-duty, just cruising around, what music would you choose to play as you're driving?
Well, lately, it's whatever my 4-year-old daughter and 7-year-old son demand to hear, which has been Zac Brown Band. They want to hear that. They want to hear the new record, you know. I'm coordinating the production on the new record, so I've been playing all of those songs over and over again in the car just to listen to how the mix sounds, and that's what they want to hear. But if I was on my own, I'd probably default to Bob Marley, James Brown. Like, those two are like my go-to. Maybe some Parliament, P-Funk.
When you listen, say, James Brown, for example, and you just totally dial in and tune your ears, do you learn new things?
Oh, absolutely. Especially, like, listening to the Bootsy Collins era James Brown. Like, you think he's repeating a pattern, but he's tricking you. He's almost never repeating the exact same pattern. A lot of my favorite bass players do that, like James Jamerson, you know, in
But you can Detroit. Be seduced and miss it and not pick it up, right, if you're not paying
attention.
Oh,
absolutely, because it's all so similar, and it's all in the context of and in the construct of the song. And I listen back to, you know, parts that I've played, and people ask me, like, hey, play that, what you just did. And I'm like, I don't know what I just did. I just know what I feel like I need to do next, but I never remember what I just did unless it's recorded and I hear it back. And I think that's part of being in the moment, too. It's like, when you're playing off of the moment and when you're playing off of the lyric and the singer and the drummer, as a bass player, I just think there's enough room in there to ad lib, and as long as you're serving the song, there's enough room to just sort of, I guess, yeah, be in the moment. And
but what's fascinating about what you're talking about is this micro moment in time, because say you and I are playing, we have to stay on beat, on rhythm in that moment, but yet you're going extemporaneous on me. So if I'm not totally conscious and dialed in and following in the micro moment, then we're off. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And I love that term, micro moment. I'm gonna borrow that.
It is. It's like within a half a beat, you've got to be there or it's ruined.
And that's the beauty of live music to me. Like, these people, the show that they see tonight, they will never, ever see that show again, because it will never happen again. Like, the way that we play those songs tonight won't ever happen again, because it's all influenced by not only what we're all doing with each other on the stage, but our state of mind, what happened to us earlier in that day, how well we feel physically, what the weather is like, and how the crowd's reacting to us. It all changes our performance slightly, you know, in very, very small ways.
I interviewed a jazz professor recently, and we were talking about those variables, and he said, if one dude has tea and the other guy has coffee, you've shifted the dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a philosophy for a long time. I don't know where it came from. I try to be as close to the same state of mind as the drummer. It doesn't always happen that way because I like to have caffeine right before the show, and I don't think he does, but try to be locked in with him. Try to be locked in with everybody, but that's, you know, to me, the bass sits right, the bass is sort of the average between the drummer and the lead singer. And if you're listening to both, even if they're not locked in with each other, if you can get in the middle, I think you can find a way to glue it together.
You don't have sheet music in front of you.
Not usually.
So, yeah, probably never. So, that being said, that says it's all predicated on practice, practicing together.
One would think. You would think that's the case. We actually practice together very little.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow,
we'll usually
surprised.
Get together at the beginning of a tour and kind of run through newer songs, but it's everyone's own job to sort of learn the songs on their own time, and then you got to know them coming into it.
And that, from my perspective, that's a little harsh.
Well, it is, but, you know, it ends up saving a lot of time, because if you already all know it, then you've skipped hours and hours of time. Because what happens is that, you know, when you're in a band, you get together, you say you're going to rehearse, and then you start talking about something that somebody did and laughing about something. Or with us, there's eight of us. So, like, the conversations just get, like, on tangents, attached to tangents, attached to tangents, and we'll waste a whole hour talking and not even touch our instruments. So
that's really fascinating. So when we're on stage right now, but if we're out in watching you guys, it really is this ad-lib show, isn't it?
It is. Say, it's gotten more refined as time's gone on because our production has grown. We have more elements in the show that are timed. So that has to be rehearsed. But more so in the older days than now, but it still happens that Zach will say, so-and-so asked me earlier if we can do this song tonight, so we're doing it. And I'm like, how does that go? Here, let me pull it up on Spotify and learn it real quick and make a chart.
So that very day?
Oh, yeah, that very hour. So that's not uncommon.
And you don't get intimidated and a little palpitation.
No, because what am I going to do? Yeah. Like, I have to know it. Back to what the bass does. These other guys, you know, and I'm not knocking them because it's like a freedom that they can, like, they don't have to hit the chord on the beat if they don't want to. They can wait until, if they don't know the song, they can wait to hear what it is and then
drop in,
play a lick. And that's awesome. But I can't do that. I've got to know it. So I'll often make charts for myself and I'll just put them on the ground. Or I have an iPad now that sometimes that I put charts on. But I just want, even at starting out this tour, I had a handful of the newer songs on a chart on an iPad just so that I didn't mess it up, because I'd rather have a crutch for a few shows and have a great show than mess up a new song.
Like you said, you can't fake it.
Yeah. I can, but...
Well, hopefully nobody will notice. Yeah.
That's when, usually when you hear a bass player sliding up the neck, they forgot the chord.
I love it. How long have you been with the Zach Brown Band, and how did it happen?
I've been with the band for 5.5 years.
They find you?
So, we found each other. I've actually known Zach and been making music with him in some capacity since 2002. Right, 2001, 2002, I met him in Atlanta.
After he's from Georgia, right?
He's from Georgia, yeah. And I was living down there and met him. I was playing at a bar, and I met him outside of the bar. And so I played music with him for a while, and then we kind of went our separate ways. I moved to Nashville, and he went on to start Zach Brown Band. And then we reconnected some years later when he started a record label. And he asked me to come help out with production on the record label. So, you know, Zach's an entrepreneur. He has many different projects that he started, different companies. They make knives and Bluetooth speakers and
is that
furniture.
Those?
Yeah, the Deemer box, yeah.
Crazy.
They make these really cool tactical knives.
So Zach Brown is an industry.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you start a business and take a chance, not everything is successful, and that's okay. but it's what got me involved with this organization. And actually, out of that came a beautiful recording studio in Nashville that Zach bought, that I helped him find, and I opened the studio.
And you still have that?
And we still have that, yeah, absolutely.
You ever been in Studio B?
What's that?
You ever been in Studio B?
RCA, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, isn't that like
I've gotten to record there before.
The mothership, really?
Yeah.
Wow, the original mic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Elvis Presley.
The old black and white checkerboard floors and those light fixtures. Actually, our studio has the same light fixtures because it was built around that same era.
Is it right in town, right in the heart, nearby?
Right, it's like 4 blocks from Studio B.
Well, I'll be in Nashville latter part of August.
So. Well, you should get in touch. I'll show you around. Yeah,
I would love it.
Yeah, we can do a part two. You can meet our studio engineers over there. And
let's do that, because that's a whole another invisible side of a band and music and recording.
Sure.
The unsung heroes, the guys on the board.
And so that's kind of what I was doing before I joined the band. I mean, I've always been a player, but working for Zach, working on the label, working on those artists' records, that sort of transitioned, you know, once those were done, that transitioned into more of a label production management job, which transitioned to this recording studio job. The way I got into the band was that they had a bass player playing on this record called the Grohl Sessions, and they came in to make the record with Dave Grohl in the studio, and I was there as an engineer, assistant engineer. And so the band came in, recorded, they left, and the engineer and I were mixing the record. And one day, while we were mixing, I get a call from Zach saying, hey, so the bass player's not going to work out. Can you come play shows with us?
So that's how it started.
That's how it started. And I was like, let me ask my wife.
And that was what?
That was 2013. December 2013. My first show was December 27th, 2013.
So you still do Nashville studio time?
I do when I can. There's not as much time for that anymore. We go out, usually play shows Thursday through Sunday, so I'm home Monday through Wednesday.
Pretty much a week in, week out.
Yeah, week in, week out.
So a lot of road time. A
lot of road time, but within that, there's a lot of home time. We get to go home every week and see our kids, which is a huge blessing.
Like, kind of like a firefighter.
It's kind of,
you know, they work like 24, as you know, but then they're off for 3-4 days.
I never thought of myself as being like a firefighter, but yes, I guess so.
That works.
We're more like fire starters, I guess.
So talk to us about some of your gigs this year coming and going.
So yeah, the Owl Tour is the name of this tour.
That's for the new album.
Yeah, touring for the new album, preparing for the new album. It's not out yet, but...
Sorry to divert, but how do you sell albums today? No longer Tower Records.
Yeah, I guess you don't sell them really as much anymore as you let people listen to them. You know, they stream them.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Switch.
Although I've heard that there's a good percentage of our fan base that buys CDs, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I love CDs. I don't listen to them as much anymore, but the industry is changing, and I don't know if it's for the better or worse, but I think that anything that makes it easier for people to access your music is better.
So your revenue stream is more predicated around ticket gates?
I would say, yeah. I mean, just knowing what streaming payouts are and knowing what show revenues are, I would say absolutely. If you think about it, live music, I would venture to say, in some form or fashion, has been around almost since the beginning of man, right? I mean, once they figured out they could make music and make sounds, have been communicating and entertaining, I would guess, since the beginning of
caveman was taking the club to the log.
Yeah, whoever was the loudest singer, or, you know, yeller or whatever, people would come to see him, right?
That's a trip.
I always try to imagine, you know, 150 years ago, what I would be doing. I'd probably be doing the same thing. Like, I don't know if I'd be playing bass, but...
Bass is more of a modern adjunct to music, isn't it?
Yeah, to do what I do, you need electronics and the electricity to move that amount of air. Although, I guess the upright double bass, you know,
right.
A good bass player on a good bass, one of those can fill up a room, but not this.
Not this.
I feel like I got off on a tangent here, but
I know.
I don't know where we started. Here we are, back to bass.
Big group, yeah. I know. Big, small world.
Yeah.
So do you ever get back to Visalia?
I do maybe every couple years. The last time I was there was for my the retirement show for my high school band director, who got me into playing bass. So I went, all the alumni got together and had sort of a Mr. Holland's Opus moment.
Wasn't that a great movie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You asked me what I do when I go home, and lately I've been working on music, so like I said, we're finishing up this record, and we had a lot of material for it, so we're getting it organized and mixed and all put together in the right sequence, and that's been my life for the last month or so. All of my hobbies have gone out the window. But it's great. We got it turned into the label, and that was a proud moment for me.
Is there still that freshness and that excitement of discovery like there was when you were in sixth grade?
I think so. I think it's changed because there's more...
Personally, in your journey, you know, is there still, when you sit down to write music, is there still that enthusiasm and yeah...
Absolutely, for me there is. When we get in the studio too, it's like, you know, that's one of the great things about Zach. He's an innovator, and he really pushes us to do different things. And sometimes it's uncomfortable too. Like, we get used to doing this and playing these songs every night and playing a certain way. And so when we go in,
does he do that on purpose?
I'm sure he does it on purpose. He might act like he doesn't, but I'm sure he knows what he's doing. And, you know, he just, you know, we'll get in there and he'll push and push and push, and because he knows that there's something else beyond what we're used to. And so it's great. Like, once we get in there and really start, you know, once you can kind of forget what you know and open yourself up and be free, then you can be creative. And I think you know it, like you feel it, once you're like, oh, this is something new. I haven't done this before. No one's heard a sound like this before. That's when we start to get really excited. I know that's when I get excited.
So that's that discovery moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of in a unique spot, too, because I get to take the music and go back and listen to it all and really break it down and see what everyone's doing and kind of like, you know, when you're in the studio, you're focused on what you're doing, what your part is. Me, this is what I'm doing, so I'm in the sound. And it's really easy to forget to listen to what everyone else is doing. So I get to go back and solo each track and listen. Oh, wow, Clay was playing this part right here on the organ. That's awesome. I didn't even hear that because I was so focused on myself. So
when you're crafting, when you're in the studio by yourself, you have your bass, but you need to say a drum. Can you electronically create a drum rhythm for you?
Oh, yeah. Nowadays you can do anything. I mean, there's some really cool software out there that...
But you do that.
Yeah, I have, yeah. I actually like to use found objects and make percussion out of them and affect them in the software to sound like drums. That's kind of I think you get something a little bit more unique than using just, a sample of a bass drum and a sample of a snare drum. That's what I like to do. But some people are great with taking samples and making it sound like a real drum kit and some, you know. The trick is making it feel good, though, making it not sound like it's computer music.
One more before we go.
Yes, sir.
You made me think of the Bluebird Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You ever gone there? Have you ever been in the circle?
I've gone there, and I've got to be in the circle before. It's intimidating, for sure, but it's really, really special. It's tiny, too. I mean,
I know. Intimate. Sure. Yeah. That's one of the cool things about it, is that I'm 3 feet from you.
Yeah, it's tiny, and it's weird, because you're in the circle. You're in the middle, and so everyone's around you, behind you.
So you'd do it again?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Again, that's a moment for me that's like really, I like to be improvisational in those kind of moments too, and like play something a little bit different than
something
what
you might
supposed to play.
Yeah. I could go on all day.
Yeah, I know, me too. Yeah, this is awesome.
For further information, where would be the best place to go to find out more about the band and you?
We have a website, zachbrownband.com. We all have bios on there. Google will tell you all kinds of things about us.
More than you want to know.
You didn't want to know. Yeah. My name is Matt Mangano, and I play bass with the Zach Brown Band.
Love it. Matt, thank you so much for spending
time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This has been really fun. Well,
thank you. I appreciate it.
I learned a lot.
It's easy to just talk.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the Mid-State Fair in Paso Robles, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.
Every morning when you come downstairs, here's a mess, but I don't care. My makeup on, shining so bright. My old sweatshirt never fit so right. Dancing around to the radio, humming the words that you don't know, cause I'm finding an angel off my list. Thinking that it don't get no better than this.
You make loving you easy. Talk by candlelight. I'm gonna slow this down and make it last. The best things fly by so fast.
You make loving you.